English Language Teaching Under the Cover.
Hello and welcome back to ELT Exposed, where in these videos, we as English language teaching professionals, we look at the behind the scenes workings of teaching and learning in English, and we kind of give you our thoughts on methodologies, approaches, and formats. Today, we are looking at video teaching and learning. Over the past couple of weeks, we've been looking at different teachers on YouTube, different teachers on TikTok, and also some celebrity videos where they're teaching directly to the camera. And we gave some thoughts on that. And today we're giving an overview of all of those thoughts. But first, let's do some introductions. I'm Neil of Teenage Fame, and I'm joined today by a video teaching OG, the original gangster, Professor Reach.
Hello, everybody. Welcome.
So,
as you can see, I'm a professional video presenter by my awesome introduction and witty banter.
It's true. When did you start? Do you remember when you started doing the video?
2009.
So, YouTube and started, 2006?
Yeah, something like that. So, if I'd put more effort into it, I could probably have a channel now with like 7 million subscribers because those early videos did surprisingly well. YouTube was a really different game then. And I remember the first video I made was The Meanings of Get. And it was, at this stage, I hadn't even done a CELTA or anything. I think I'd only been teaching for about 4 months. And I made a video about the meanings of get. Oh, it can mean all these different things. It's so useful. It can do this, 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 and this. Exactly the kind of video that perhaps we would later criticize. Although it did do very well. And then I started to make more videos and get a lot of positive feedback from people about it. But I never really saw it as something that would take off, which was a mistake. Really the big mistake that I made with that channel was that I thought that YouTube was already established. You know, the big names were already there at the time. That was Mr. Duncan, who is one of the people we looked at, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And it was interesting looking at his video and then looking at the more recent people that are on YouTube and seeing the difference. And I think going back to what you were saying about your videos as well, and you do videos now that are excellent, exquisite, and they should be watched by every and all English learners and teachers if you want to emulate a model. But it's going back to your original videos, they still got views, people were still engaging, people still like them, even though you've only done 4 months of teaching and it just happened to be on YouTube. So, that question lingered in the back of my mind. Well, is it good teaching? Is it effective for the learner? And I'm hoping that we can kind of unpack that today and look into it.
Yeah, so that is the issue, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's can you do something that's effective video teaching, and really, you know, not even just on YouTube, because YouTube has its own quirks, TikTok has its own quirks, but can you actually use a video format teaching to actually be useful for learners, particularly language learners, which is what we've generally been looking at? Mm-hmm. And that is a real big question.
And that handily brings us into our first clip.
I'm thinking about my family. I'm feeling homesick.
You want to talk about it?
Sure. I have some photos.
Yes. Yes, you do.
Photos really help. This is my mother, and this is my father. They are rodeo clowns.
What do rodeo clowns do?
They make jokes at a rodeo. People laugh.
What do rodeo clowns do? Speak.
They make jokes at a rodeo.
Speak.
That's very different.
Okay.
What is that? Yeah, just awful, isn't it? I mean, it's just totally synthetic, like totally overacted. It's like a pantomime for kids. And then, you know, they have the kind of speak, which is all right, I guess, you know. But then people are going to be saying it in that ridiculous way, aren't they?
Yeah.
What do rodeo clowns do? Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's not really a criticism of video teaching, but it's like they're doing it in the worst possible way. If there's one thing you can do, it's not that.
But yeah, I think it bleeds into what we've talked about with previous YouTube teachers and TikTok teachers, is that synthetic element, the bad practices that often come out from these teachers. And we don't know if it's they're bad teachers, they're inexperienced teachers, they're teaching because they've watched something like this and go, oh, I need to give a synthetic model. I need to speak this way. But I mean, for me, that would make, wouldn't that make you a bad teacher though?
We saw it with the majority of them. We saw synthetic models with Lucy.
For example, thank you so much for packing my shopping for me. Oh, you're very welcome.
What? Come on. Really? Oh, you're very welcome. We saw them with Alicia at 101.
How have you been since the last time I saw you? Is what the...
See, that was a terrible model, wasn't it? I think we saw them with Duncan. I think Duncan tended to give like one word drills, didn't he?
Yeah.
So maybe not as synthetic, but I mean, Duncan just in general speaks in a very synthetic way. This kind of clowny, kind of entertainer way all the time.
Ball was on target for the goal.
And he did that one right, didn't he? The ball was on target rather than the ball was on target.
In this sentence...
I don't like this. And I'm being critical now, very critical, because I used to do this as well, where you'd like highlight the target language. But I think when you're doing it with a weak form in the pronunciation model, it can be very confusing because it does encourage people to look at that and say, the ball was on target, because that's what it seems like you're telling them to do, doesn't it?
And that's why you don't have the text up on the screen anyway.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, that's it. Yeah.
We talked about in the previous videos, it's better to have the audio only
model,
so people can model it correctly and then introduce it, because they're two separate skills.
Then with the TikTokers, ironically, we saw less of it. We actually seemed to see more authentic language with the TikTokers.
Teaspoon, corkscrew, glass, mug, knife, cutlery.
And then with the celebrity teachers, we saw a mixed bag with Ricky Gervais presenting the most authentic model.
He's cheesed off. What's up? Are you upsetting? He's cheesed off. What am I cheesed off about? Oh, well, I had to postpone some gigs.
Oh my God, his models are good too. We're very, very focused on this whole authentic model thing, but this is such a minor... I mean, it's just something you have to get right, really. It's not... If you get it right, that doesn't mean that the video is that useful, and it doesn't mean that someone's a good teacher. It's just something you have to get right. The authentic model is a necessary condition, but it's not a sufficient condition to make these videos that particularly useful. Even if we were getting them with authentic models. And I found someone, by the way, I did find a video teacher. I can't remember his name now, but he's big as well. And he does exactly the same as Lucy and Alicia, which is like, you know, here's 10 phrases you can say when you're lost in a forest and really want to go to the toilet. But he actually says them like in a really natural way. So he does exactly the same thing, but he does a good model. Now, do I then still think that that's really particularly useful when it comes to video teaching? I'm not so sure about that. It's certainly not what I was trying to do with Professor Rich with recent videos, mm-hmm. Which, you know, you kind of talked about. My recent videos were mainly aimed at teaching students techniques and information about language teaching that would help them.
Yeah.
So, like, I did a video on the power of context and demonstrating why context is important, how context can help you, and how an understanding of context can help language learners. I did a video about what effective language learners actually need to do. Like, what can you do? I think it was like one of those cheesy titles, like, here's 7 things you can do to be an effective language learner or something like that. You know, and it would be talking about not like, oh, go and read this book or go and do this, but like find those activities which are engaging and sustainable long term, you know, and also talking about things like fluency versus accuracy. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that students understanding these things, it really helps them because, you know, I often get the question. I mean, all language teachers get this, right? You get this question, teacher, how do I improve my speaking, right? And the issue, what they really want to say is, teacher, I don't have a teacher and, like, I don't have enough money for thousands of hours of English classes and I don't have anyone I can speak English to. So how can I improve my fluency is normally what they mean. Yeah. They might mean vocabulary as well, but they tend to mean fluency. How can I improve my fluency? And sometimes they don't realize they mean fluency, but it is what they mean. They mean, how do I make it so I can speak without having to think and it's so hard and I just want to speak, you know?
Yeah.
So they're really talking about fluency there, which is something you need to practice. You practice and practice and practice and practice, just like you play guitar, you play the same set of chords again and again and again. Eventually you can play them very fast, but when you first do it, it's like dring, you have to like put each individual finger on the right string, move that one, dring, right? Then you do that 10,000 times and then you can do it super fast. So that's exactly what fluency is. So then I always advise these activities that students can do on their own. Which one of them is called describing what you see, and the other one's called imaginary conversations. So describing what you see, you know, it's like, oh, I can see 2 bottles of orange juice on the 3rd shelf of my set of shelves. On the floor next to my shelf, there's a backpack. I don't think there's anything in the backpack right now. Just literally that. You're just talking to yourself about what you can see, mm-hmm. right? You can say it out loud or you say it in your head. Right. And the other activity, imaginary conversations. OK, here's Johnny Depp and Maria. This is from one of my real students who was called Maria, who fancied Johnny Depp. She always used to do an imaginary conversation with her and Johnny Depp. And her fluency actually improved very quickly. She'd be like, hi, Johnny, how's it going? Oh, Maria, you look very nice today. Whatever. Right. The idea is you're just doing the same thing that a story writer would do. You're imagining a conversation between 2 people. You don't have to do it out loud. You can just do it in your head. It's fluency based improvement. And when you tell students that, like 80% of the time you get the same question, which is, how do I know that what I'm saying is right? Like, if I'm just describing this scene now, if I was doing it in Spanish, you know, and I looked out my window and say, you know, hay dos árboles por allí or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. How do I know that that's right? Is it por allí or por allá or is it por or some other preposition? Well, the answer to that is it doesn't matter because it's a fluency-based practice activity.
Yeah.
So this is where the understanding of fluency versus accuracy can be really helpful to students, mm-hmm. because if they understand that when you're focusing on fluency, you don't really need to worry about accuracy so much, mm-hmm. then they can just chill out about that. You just say, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter. Of course, you should try and apply the things that you know, mm-hmm. but that's what you're doing when you're doing that activity. You're trying to use the grammar and the structures and put them together to make something which you think makes sense. And just doing that is fluency-based activity. Mm-hmm. It's not as good as conversation because you don't get the feedback. That's true. But if you're on your own, you haven't got a partner and you haven't got enough money for thousands of hours of classes, it's a nice thing to know, and it's a good activity to learn. And some students really enjoy it, and when they do, it works really well.
Yeah.
So it's a good thing for students to know. Mm-hmm. However, that video that I made explaining all that, I think has like 150 views, and it's like 2 months old. So
at this time,
yeah, by no means a success. I mean, it's a failure in terms of YouTube. Why is that? Now that's the question, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a few questions about that. Like, is this idea of learner training, is that actually a good thing? Is it actually useful for students? Because from a teacher's perspective, when I do it in classes, I'm pretty certain it is. They certainly seem to be picking up on it. And when I follow up with them, sometimes they say, oh yeah, I tried it and it was brilliant, you know, and I do it all the time and blah, 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 with all these kind of learner training stuff that you can do. So what about with a video? Is it effective then? Well, I would imagine so, but I'm not sure. I haven't had as much feedback with that. I mean, maybe with a video, they just stick it on in the background, they listen to me waffling on, and they don't really pick up on it. You get a few comments which indicate that they do, but maybe they don't. I don't know. But then on top of that, whether it's effective or not, it's clearly not the thing that right now is working with the YouTube algorithm. So, yeah, there's a number of issues with it. I mean, maybe when I'm actually engaging with my students in class and I tell them these things, they're already engaging, they're already in rapport, so they're receptive to it, and they're like, yeah, cool, oh, that's great. But maybe when they listen to me babble on the video, they're just like, oh, Teacher Rich babbling on about something, I'm just going to tune out. Mm-hmm. Maybe it doesn't work. I'm not entirely certain. It's just one of my thoughts about what video teaching could be.
Well, I think there's a lot to unpack with that, but I'm going to go into the thing that you've just raised up, and it is establishing rapport. And we both know in classroom that you need that. You need to establish rapport. You need to establish a relationship before, you know, someone can trust you to, you know, listen and learn. And I think one of the things that comes with the tuba teachers, the video teachers on YouTube and TikTok, is they establish, I don't know, like a personality, a brand, even that people know. So, you know, they say this in this certain way, and they kind of get to know the person over this period of time. And because they know this person over a period of time, they kind of build that rapport, and then they kind of they learn from that. So I think it's one of those things that often gets discounted, is it's not that the video, the students are engaging with the videos, they're engaging with the person. And that's why not everybody could do the YouTube video teaching, because not everyone is able to convey their personality in a controlled, sanitized way, because I'm sure they're not what it is, but let's say their teacher personality effectively through the screen. So I think that's what works, because I think what you would find is if you were to give the same script to a whole bunch of different people, one of those people is a YouTube teacher, and that script is, you know, like one of those standard 10 things to say if you got stuck in a toilet and there's an alligator outside, you know, the YouTube teacher would come out, because they have I don't think it's an innate quality, you know, they've learned how to convey themselves through the screen. I don't know if it's they've learned it consciously or it's unconscious or it's from whatever background that they've done, but whatever it is, it's there compared to others.
I think you're absolutely right.
I think it's more of an accumulation over time. I don't think it's just this one video. I think if someone just watched English with Lucy, we keep picking on her, English 101 or Mr. Duncan, and they see one of those videos, and they will just go, what's this? But you know, if they're seeing it again and again and again, then it's like, oh, it's this guy.
Well, we can pick on English with Lucy. She's the biggest She's making loads of money. You know, I don't think she needs to worry just yet about our little podcast comments. Okay, no offense, Lucy. Come on the show. We'll talk about it. So I think you're absolutely right. I think it's personality based. And I think that the people who are effective on YouTube do exactly what you say. They make a connection with their audience. And then to some extent, it doesn't really matter what they're doing. And that's the problem with maybe not just YouTube, but it might actually be a problem with, well, teaching, really.
Yeah,
I guess one of the ways that you're going
to... Dancing monkeys.
Yeah. Well, not necessarily even dancing monkeys, just cool monkey, whatever, you know?
Yeah.
A monkey that can just make a use social connection. And the thing is, I even think that good teachers also do that, especially in a language learning classroom. But as you say, these people who are good, these people who are popular when it comes to video teaching, they are effective at doing it through the teaching. And I very much think that the people who watch them feel like they're being recognized for that. They feel that, you know, that these teachers are talking to them, interacting with them. You know, they feel part of the community and all that stuff, you know, all that social media stuff. So I think that definitely bleeds into it and helps us to understand to some extent why things are the way they are, why the videos which are popular are the ones that are popular. Not just because of some algorithm,
it's not the video.
But because
it's a cult of personality. It's a psychology thing. I think that goes beyond teaching.
Yeah.
Where we once we feel a connection with that person, then we more easily trust them.
Yeah.
Even if we know what they say is wrong, we might discount that, and you know, this is what leads to cults and poor political decisions and you know, people doing stuff where you just kind of blindly follow the leader without thinking, oh, actually maybe this person is not doing what is best for me.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the tricky thing, isn't it? Because, you know, you don't, it's always a bit difficult as a teacher to put yourself in the position where you're saying, I know what's best for the students more than they do, you know?
Yeah.
But you know, I do often feel like that, sort of. It's not that students don't know what's best for them. It's that they don't have the information that they need to be able to see that. At the end of the day, you can't tell someone what's best for them. But what you can do, well, you can, but they won't listen, or they shouldn't. I wouldn't. Someone told me. You know, but what you can do is you can demonstrate to them what you're talking about. You know, it's kind of like when that previous activity I just told you about, where you practice fluency-based practice on your own, and someone expresses, well, yeah, but I need a teacher to correct me. I can't, what's the point in doing it on my own? But then if you demonstrate to them this idea of fluency versus accuracy, you know, and you say, look, it's important to understand this. Sometimes you can focus on accuracy. For example, when you're talking to me right now in this one-to-one class, right, that you can afford 1 hour a week of, then nice to focus a bit on accuracy then. You know, we do feedback and you can think about it and you can go, oh, I don't want to make that mistake again. So I'll think about it and I've got the correction and all right. But then when you're doing this other activity, the sole idea of the activity is really to familiarize yourself with the structures so that when you put the pieces of the puzzle together to make your sentence, then it happens faster and faster and faster and faster because you're more familiar with them. Okay. And if you can make it into a nice little interesting narrative, bonus points, because it'd be more engaging. Mm-hmm. So once they understand that, then they become much more open to it and go, oh, you're right. Maybe it's not so rubbish. Maybe I'll give it a go. Mm-hmm. But then now we're going on to the video teaching. So it's like, you know, can I go to the 10 billion people who watch the top tuber teach and say, hey, that's rubbish for you. Come and watch my stuff. Don't know about that. Don't know how you would even, you know.
You'd be like, who are you? I know Lucy, but who
I feel connected.
You?
Yeah. Totally. And I know that because of the big streams that I do for Oxford Online English. You know, like we'll get 250 concurrent viewers We get loads of regulars, and the regulars themselves have already made a community. I haven't done anything about it, really. I just go on there, kind of do a lesson, interact with them a lot in the chat, and they love it, and they say hello to each other. When at the start of class, we turn up and it's like, hi, XYZ, hi, XYZ, hi, XYZ. They all know each other, and they feel like they're coming to their fun, like famous internet English class, because it is quite a big number of people to have. And it's one of the more popular live streams on YouTube, but it's very much that community and that engagement. And I'm pretty sure, I mean, I try to make my lessons as useful as possible in those streams. It's like elements of interaction, elements of storytelling, activities, and even pronunciation drills and stuff like that. Unfortunately, you can't really do fluency-based practice. You can kind of do it with the chat, but it's not the same as actually speaking. But we do a bit of that, and I do some correction with that. But, you know, I think I could probably just go on there and just do grammar exercises. And it'd probably be almost as popular, because I think a big chunk of it is just the fact that there's already a community and they're engaging and they enjoy it. And the fact that the teaching's good or bad is not as important for the kind of online streamer teaching to be popular.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think there's this element of community, of a classroom, that something like that live stream can somewhat recreate. And I think, you know, a lot of people forget about that element when it comes to teaching, is the community and the relationships that you build within the class, and that relationship you build with the teacher. So I guess a lot of this rests on, you have a teacher, a YouTube teacher, a TikTok teacher that's engaging. They build a relationship with a person, even though you kind of, it's not how we think of as relationship. It's more kind of like a knowing of this person, and then they do these videos. But these videos, they are not best practice. They are often not really kind of like any good for a student long term. You know, like,
I don't want to say they're not any good.
No, I mean, you know, like,
they're low quality. We've kind of hammered on that point a lot, haven't we?
I'm more like, if you're trying to learn English and each video that comes out, you watch, and this is what you do to learn English every week. And it's this video is 10 things to say when, you know, you accidentally eat the dog's food at your neighbor's house. I don't know. But, you know, like, if that's everything that they're getting every week, this is the time that what they're investing into learning English, then it's a waste of time, it really is just an absolute waste of time. It's the way that they, especially the YouTube teachers, it wasn't so bad on TikTok, overstuff these videos, because you can just bling through. If you're gonna go, okay, just say you're sorry. I didn't mean to eat the dog food. Say, oh, it looks so delicious, I couldn't help myself. Yeah. You know, rather than kind of doing a, and then they kind of need to look at the dog food and just, if you say this and then what, and the meaning behind that, you don't need that, because the more or less it's become video flashcards. Yeah. So I think one of the other things with the videos is they need more substance and structure, in that they need a progression. And that's one of the issues with YouTube, is there's no learner progression. There's, you know, we start out with learning be and have plus nouns, and then we slowly go through the different tenses and stuff like that, when it's just another 10 things for you to say if, you know, you accidentally throw your cat on the subway line. where is that progression going? So it's kind of like the teacher's just gone, I think this is something that people think that they will want to know or learn, but they don't think of the broader, more macro, more meta thing.
Yeah.
Actually presenting a course, basically.
Yeah.
But then how would you even do that on YouTube or TikTok?
Yeah, well, that's kind of partly what we were going to talk about, isn't it, I guess? And this might be an interesting point to bring up one of my sort of favorite things that we saw.
Yeah.
Which was... what's his name? Thingy's pronunciation workshop. What was his name? The BBC Learn English guy.
Tim.
Good old Tim. Tim.
Out on the Raz with his mates again.
Timmy. So old Timma. I hope that Tim comes on the show at some point. So Timmy. So what do I like about Tim? Well, first of all, I think BBC Learn English, like you said, I think it's a bit of a treasure trove you can dive into. You can get some real nice things in there. But as we discovered, their YouTube channel is just a mishmash of all kinds of nonsense, just all over the scale. That's why maybe it's better to kind of approach it from the website level rather than from the YouTube level. My initial impressions are actually quite positive in a number of ways. I was just exploring here the grammar, and you know, I'm quite impressed at the quantity and completeness of this. And I have to say, I think you're right that these are not the things which actually tend to come up if you do a little Google search and say, oh, how do I do the third conditional in English? Then I don't think this is what comes up. But it does seem to be complete and kind of interesting. And it's got some context here. It's even got a lovely little practice activity. It's been well thought out for the third conditional. Sorry, I'm not concentrating too much on the pronunciation there that you wanted to focus on. But, you know, I mean, that's a nice controlled practice activity there with an interactive questionnaire. So, yeah, so initially I'm actually quite impressed. But the course stuff on the website was really good. And, yeah, Tim's stuff was good. Tim's stuff was good. I seem to remember that it was a little bit played up and kind of jokey and entertaining. But then when he came to the models, I think they were quite good, weren't they?
Yeah.
And the points that he was making with the pronunciation were also useful.
And they had and multiple kind of, models as well from...
That's right. Yeah, Atlas. Yeah. Oh, that was brilliant. Yeah, because they had the kind of vox pop. And that was unique, wasn't it? For the fact that no one else was doing that, really. So... I mean, the YouTubers tried to do it because they collab. But it's all just a bunch of teachers doing synthetic models at the end of the day. But then with Tim, they actually had real interviews and they would pull out the language from the interviews, which meant it was completely natural people on the street speaking English. So it was absolutely fun. So, yeah.
Let's ask some other people in London what they got up to last night.
At 9 o'clock last night, I was watching a movie.
I was laying in bed.
I was invited to a dinner at my friend's house.
I was playing football.
I was out drinking.
Well, what interesting lives we all lead. Now they...
Oh, a bit of a narrow age range of interviewees there, Tim.
Yeah, but one thing I do like...
Ageist.
And one thing that I particularly appreciate about this video, and I don't think we've seen with any of the tuba teachers... what you have with the tuba teachers, you've got a mono model, as in you've only got one model for the pronunciation. Whereas here, you've just got boom, 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 a whole different mix. Yes, mostly they're going to be Londoners, but still, you know, boy, girl, all different that's examples, good. All natural.
So I liked him. That was one of my favorites. Quite interactive, something else I liked about it. And it was a course. There was a progression. You could go on the website. You could do the website bit. You have the video bit. You know, it was almost like the ideal version of all this that people might have in their heads of putting it all together with a video and a course and different elements of it. I mean, all you'd need really is then a teaching element as well. And you have something I think that could be really great with all kinds of different materials.
Yeah,
but the video itself encouraged engagement, which made it, it takes it from a purely one-way media to interactional. Yep. And I think that has always been the big problem with these, with video learning, even before YouTube, is that it's so one way. And one way teaching in the real world, if it's not a video, let's say you're in a lecture theater and you get one way teaching, that's bad pedagogy. We spoke about that. I have a bit of disdain for certain university lecturers who never do anything but lecture, because it's very one way. I mean, not disdain, that's the wrong word. I just think, you know, you could do more. You could throw some discussion in there. There's nothing to stop you from going, right, everyone turn to the person next to them and talk about this question for 3 minutes. You know, just a little bit of engagement could go a long way in a lecture theatre. But, you know, in general, it's the absolute minimum you can do as a teacher is just pour the information out and just be an information fountain, right? So, and that's the problem with videos, is that they naturally lend themselves to that. And the interactional element is very difficult to incorporate. And when you do incorporate it, it can often be very clunky, like the video we watched at the start of this discussion, which attempted to be interactional, but it just seemed so clunky and it was synthetic and it was badly done.
Yeah, it wasn't part of a larger, more organized narrative. I don't know what you mean. I think basically what we're saying is that what we have here and the limitations with video teaching, be it in the format, you know, that we saw at the beginning of the show, or tuba teachers and live streams and stuff, or maybe not so much live streams, is that it's deductive. You know, it's teacher-centered, and it's, you know, expository. I don't know why I have such difficulty with pronouncing that, but yeah, it's just, you know, lots of exposition, lots of just teacher talk time, and not so much student-centered or engaging. And I think that is the actual physical limitation of the teaching with video, because you aren't there. You literally are not there. You are only your video form is there, but it cannot change. So I think to push those limitations, what we have and what we can do with it is, as you point out with Tim's pronunciation workshop and the BBC, if you have that, if you can have the videos in this broader, more organized format, like on the BBC website, where it's got a progression, and maybe in those videos that you can refer to other videos of, so how you can continue the progression, but also the way he does the interactive elements, having all the actual natural models as well. And I'd also throw in with the TikTok, I really like the duets with that, especially the one with Instant English. I think it was Instant English, where, you know, he's just having that kind of conversation. Oh, what did you watch on TV last night?
Yeah.
Conversation practice, TV series edition. I'll read red, you read blue, and duet this. Let's go. May, have you seen Peaky Blinders? One day, seriously. Yeah, me too, I love it. What are you watching at the moment then?
Yeah, I was just thinking about that one. And I absolutely think when you're trying to do the interactional element on the videos, it's like you want to amp up the authenticity. And one of the reasons for that is because it already feels very inauthentic, because, you know, whatever you're doing, you're speaking to a video. So there's already like this kind of like, there's something not right about this, right? So if you can just amp up the authenticity as much as possible, then I think that can help it. That can at least help it seem less, you know, now I'm doing my pronunciation with a video or whatever, you know. And I absolutely agree with you. Yeah, the cheeky chappy, whether it was Instant English or whatever, you know, he had a very natural style, didn't he? And he even did the kind of listening. Oh, yeah, did you like what was on TV last night? You know, so that was great. And also, as you say, with the multiple models, that, again, that's an authentic element, authenticity, real English, with a diversity of sources of people saying the same thing. So it helped to, like, boost that authentic quality, which you're going to lose a little bit because at the end of the day, you're interacting with a video.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's interesting because it's kind of the more authentic that you get, I feel it lends more to being that engaging teacher, that teacher that builds rapport. And, you know, why not lean into that more? You know, like, you don't, I think what it is there's this, I remember this story, I can't remember what book I was reading, where this daughter goes to her mom in the kitchen one day, and she notices that her mom she's got this ham, this piece of ham, and she's putting it into the tray to put it in the oven, and that she notices that the ham, her mom's cutting off the sides, you know, like the corners of the ham. And she's like, the daughter's like, why are you cutting off the corners of this ham? And this ham, this is a piece of ham, but the tray's really big. And her mum's just like, I don't know. I'm not sure why I'm doing it this way. And then she thinks about it. And then she thinks, well, my mum used to do it this way. And so her daughter goes, what, you know, why is that? And, you know, they left it for a couple of weeks, and then her mum came round, her mum's mum came round, her grandma, the daughter's grandma, came round, and, you know, her mum was cooking the ham again, and, you know, they asked the grandma, they asked the mum's mum, you know, why did she cut the corners? Was it, you know, like more juice or anything like that? And she's like, no, the tin that I had was too small. And it was one of those things where it's always been done this way, and it gets carried through. And I think that's kind of what the issue is coming from with the synthetic language. It's just video's not been around for a long time, and every time people do this present, they have this presenter mode, like, this is supposed to be the way that I talk on, this is how you're supposed to talk on camera.
I hope you've enjoyed today's lesson.
And I do remember that there wasn't a specific reason for that. I think it was something to do with the sound quality or something. But it kind of just stuck. Now that issue is not there anymore. And we can just literally be authentic. We can use our, you know, mics in our phones and stuff. But it's just kind of, this is how it's always been done. And it's the same, you know, like the grammar teacher kind of thing. And it's just taking a long time to kind of move out of that, not just for teachers. I think it's actually going to go faster for teachers, but for learners as well, in that they have that expectation that someone should speak slow and repeat after me. I have an alligator outside my door.
And you have to have a lot of experience as a learner in their language learning classroom before you realize that. And you find that the experienced learners, they've come round against that, and they, you know, they're very kind of cynical about certain things, and they'll say stuff like, you know, all we ever learned was the present perfect, or all we ever learned was to be, again and again and again, you know, because they got that stereotype they wanted.
That's how you learn. And that's one of the biggest issues that I have with public institutions, is there's this idea of everyone's got this idea of this is how a classroom is, this is how you learn, it sucks, so nobody wants to learn. And it's not it's not like that at all, especially if you've got good pedagogy, because pedagogy, when it's done well, is engaging. It fuels that curiosity, and you want more of it, because your body craves knowledge and new experiences, and that feeling of achievement when you've got something, you know, you know that you can do this new thing now. It's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's
beaten out of you.
But yeah, because at the moment, all I'm seeing are the pinnacle of what we're finding with video teaching is one-way teaching, the kind that I tried to do on Professor Rich, which, you know, I actually don't go for too much interaction on Professor Rich. I try to just do it as information dump, but I try to make a high quality information dump mm-hmm. that's not just vocabulary like everyone else is doing, but it's like teaching, you know, it's like the philosophy of teach a man to fish rather than give him a fish, right? So giving someone vocabulary is like giving them fish. So I might do a video about how to better learn vocabulary or something like that. Mm-hmm. So there's that. There's kind of like one-way teaching, but that gives learners skills that they can then go away with into the real world. But that doesn't necessarily solve the problem a lot of learners have where they just don't actually have the means to use English in the real world. Like they might just not be in a situation now where they can use English. And it's not until they get that job that it has an English speaking element or they move to an English speaking country that they really have the opportunity to practice frequently. Mm-hmm. And therefore that kind of stuff might have limited use. So then we go on to the idea of trying to force video to be interactional. And we get to the higher ends of that, which is like BBC Learning English. And maybe the kind of live stream stuff that I do with Oxford Online English. So I think the only thing that might be missing from this, and it's a bit weird really that it is missing from it, is more extensive practice. They have the pronunciation practice of just, you know, repeat after me kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But then I feel like it should be taken one step further. And since they've got a whole website, then it would make sense for me that he would kind of redirect you to the specific page for that lesson and say, oh, go here and do our following up activities. Now, I'm actually just gone to the website, the link in the video description. And it is for that video, and there is an activity. So they actually have got it as well. He just didn't mention it. Mm-hmm. So that, I think, is there something more we can do with that as well? Because the best thing we seem to be able to do with that is, you know, the kind of exercises that you could just get if you just Googled something. I want to practice present perfect English grammar exercises. You know, you'll get a list of them. So you can do that kind of stuff. But in a more classroomy way,
yeah.
You know, where people get nominated in the chat or something like that. And then you can do this sort of this kind of very, what do you call it? Controlled pronunciation practice or just controlled practice in general, where you're practicing pronunciation from a good model, maybe getting some tips along the way as to how you do it. Or you'll go into that kind of the thing that the cheeky TikToker does, cheeky chappy, kind of quite good looking guy, I think, probably has lots of female students, who interacts with his camera and they have that kind of conversation.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm not sure if that's the limit of that and which one of those is the way forward here. I'm not so sure because it does feel to some extent like the kind of in putting the interaction element into a video, it does seem a bit grating. You know, it does seem like, I mean, maybe it'd be better to have the one-way thing, but have it with a little assignment at the end where the students then all write about their experiences in the comments. I mean, that would be kind of ideal, but, you know, you'd have to really have motivated, engaged students who are being very proactive about their learning in order to get that. So is that the way forward? I don't know. And right now, I'm not certain. I'm not certain how to increase the quality of the current video teaching we have. But what I do know is that it has to happen and it will happen because it's so much more accessible.
Yeah.
I mean, Lucy is getting millions of views on all of her videos. Millions. Mm-hmm. In my entire career, I haven't taught anywhere near millions of students. Mm-hmm. You know, it's probably in the thousands, but it's never going to be millions, mm-hmm. you know, but she's reaching millions. Mm-hmm. That's how accessible it is. Because there's people who don't have a lot of money for classes, or they don't have time, or they can't fit into their schedule. Million and one reasons. The fact is, it can be very useful to have access to video learning content.
Yep.
But particularly language learning is an area where it needs something else. Because it's not just a video about philosophy and explaining what Hume said about dualism versus materialism, right? Mm-hmm. That might work if you're a really entertaining philosophy professor. I would argue that even that would benefit from something else, mm-hmm. either some behind the scenes learner autonomy stuff or an interactive element. One of the best MOOCs I ever did, because you know I did quite a few of these multiple online learning courses when Coursera was popular, yeah. about 12 years ago. I don't think Coursera is particularly popular now. I think there's other ones that are more popular, but I did quite a few of them and they were very high quality. And one of the ones that was the most high quality, it had a lot of the elements that we're talking about. It was a psychology course called Irrational Behavior. And the teacher for that, hey, I'd love to have him on. I should contact him. The professor for that, he used to do a lot of the things that we do in language teaching. So at the start of the video, because with Coursera, it had these options, it would pause the video and it would pop up and it'd ask a question and it got you to write your answer. You couldn't continue the video until you'd done it.
Right.
And that was like his setting schemata, right?
Yeah.
And then at the end, they might have a reflection. So it might just ask a question about the video and have like a multiple choice of three options. And which option, you know, the option's pretty clear, which is the right one if you were paying attention. But it's just a little bit of reflection, just getting you to look back, which is another technique we use in language learning, right?
Yeah.
And I really liked that. And then that coupled with the forums on Coursera, mm-hmm. that really worked for me.
Yeah.
But that's a whole learning system, isn't it? And we're not going to, you know, that's not going to happen on YouTube, not unless someone combines YouTube with a learning system. Mm-hmm. But I think that's the way to go with it. That kind of thing, Moodles and BBC Learning English obviously tried. Mm-hmm. I think the thing that they're lacking is they haven't got enough comment interaction and forum. You really need it plugged into the video.
Yeah.
We want it to be... That's the thing YouTube does have. It's got the comment section. So the community's there.
Yep.
You just needs to be combined with a course and some other bits and bobs. Mm.
Yeah, so it's working with trying to come up with an overall system, because a lot of the stuff that you mentioned there is like comments and pausing videos to do that sort of stuff where you're answering things, you know, you don't do with YouTube, but you could do with YouTube, you know, where you could ask the person to pause and write their answer in the comments or something like that. But, you know, this whole idea of an ecosystem, a whole system revolving that with the video just being one component of, I think is hugely important and one of the big ways of going forward with this, because you can build those communities, you can do exercises and practices and such, but it's how do you build that whole entire system in a disjointed internet web? Because I think BBC kind of did it, but it's all on their one website. But how would you do what BBC has done, or that this system, but then your stuff is on, you know, you've got some stuff on the social media, on your TikTok, you've got some stuff on your YouTube, you've got some stuff on a forum somewhere, and maybe your other stuff on a website. I think people want the ideal of, well, why don't we just put it all in one space on the website? But that's not how people interact with the internet. You know, they take bits and bobs from elsewhere. So how can you recreate that? I don't know, but I think if you solve that, you're right. You know, this is going to be one of the best ways to use this format going forward. Next level, video learning. I think we've more or less touched on everything that I think we could do with that, and going forward with that, what we could do beyond this format, because it lends into other things. We can go towards the app-based kind of the Duolingo, so where we actually have more interactive elements, because they've started to use videos in Duolingo, in Chinese apps that I use, like Chinese Skill and Hello Chinese. They actually have Vox clips of people, and you have to listen to them and, you know, put in the right answer, what you think they're saying and that sort of stuff. So there's that. And, you know, if you're interested in that, we will look into it. So please leave a comment below. And people may think it's the distant future. Probably not. It's just waiting for the right technology to be for the mainstream. But VR. Virtual reality.
Well, yeah, I mean, it has its ups and downs, VR, doesn't it? It's kind of seemed like it was all the rage 5 years ago, and then it disappeared again. It's kind of like when
it just needs the technology. Like the same thing as YouTube, right? You know, when you went with YouTube, you're like, oh, it's done to death. But we didn't have smartphones in every person's hand at that point.
Yeah, you're right.
So
we're just waiting for
that same equivalent thing to
accessible,
happen with VR.
VR tech. Yeah, totally. No, you're absolutely right, actually. I mean, if everyone had a VR headset in their hand, then it would, you're right, VR would take off like boom. And as for the apps, I think they're already massive, like Duolingo. Like, there are people on Duolingo who've done like 10 courses, 10 different languages, right? Mm-hmm. That's amazing. And they've just learned it well, obviously, they do other stuff, but mainly from Duolingo. And apparently, the general consensus is if you absolutely complete a Duolingo course, which is a fair few hundred hours, I think, maybe like 500 hours or something like that, if you these days, because they're a lot more fleshed out than they used to be back in the day, then that gets you to A2.
Yeah.
So you totally go from nothing to A2 with an app.
Yeah.
You don't need to buy any classes, you know? That's an amazing advancement in learning technology.
Yeah, so I think with technology in a broader sense, not just videos, maybe videos as part of this technology learning revolution, is a very exciting time, and where I'm very happy and curious and excited to be talking about this on our shows and stuff coming forward. If you're watching this out there, leave comments on kind of like how you have interacted with technology and anything that you think we should be looking at to explore with our videos. And let us know what you thought of this video, if you agree with our ideas. Anything else that you want to add, Rich?
No, I think that was a nice little summary at the end there, a nice little slant on it to look at Blue's Clues and sort of talk about the differences with the adults and kids and video and stuff. Yeah, I think there's a lot to kind of chew over and think about. So yeah, it was fun to kind of have this thematic build up.
Marvel phase comments one. We have.
Right, yeah. Yeah, in 12 years, we're going to have an epic finale with all this. So I'll be Thanos.
I'll be Ant-Man crawling up your ass.
Have you ever 50% seen that of the students will do extra homework. And this will free up the other 50%. It's balance. Being interesting to see the millions of comments from our loving fans down below telling us what you'd like us to look at next. And if you'd like to come on the show, the only qualification necessary is that you're an experienced educator of some description, and then we'll be happy to interview you. We've got some really interesting interviews coming up on the channel very soon.
Yeah.
Thank you. You can catch me at youtube.com/professorreach. and on this channel, and twitch.tv/profitgaming live streams on Saturday, interactive gaming Jackbox. Okay, over to Neil.
If you're looking for more stuff from me, teamteacherchina.com have a lot of our PowerPoint materials on there that you can use instantly in your classroom. We've got Team Teacher English, where I put those PowerPoint materials into a video format, not dissimilar to Blue's Clues, actually very dissimilar, but I try. And Team Teacher Baby, where I take my experience as a teacher and put that into teaching my child. Okay. See you all next time.
That was a good example there.